The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to talk about health and healing. Our issues will be looking at the link between war and big finance and sharing some insights that will surprise you, and then you'll have a chance to share your thoughts. My guest in our program today will be Jesse Ventura, and we're going to talk about new priorities to reduce military spending and to give more power to the people to make more democratic choices. Let's begin. First, when it comes to caffeine, that's something I know, well, I know enough about to know that it's not healthy. My doctoral dissertation was on caffeineism. My clinical work in the laboratory was on caffeineism. So I had a chance to see what caffeine did, the humans in laboratory experiments. And then I looked at the whole world literature. And I decided that, with few exceptions, caffeine was extremely bad, not the least of which was that it's highly anabolic. And I can remember at the time a very well-known medical doctor with a strong background in biochemistry said that in order to reduce local alkalosis pain, he would give a highly anabolic substance, mainly caffeine. But the caffeine by itself also created an acidic system which caused pain. Therefore, he said, in order to eliminate a lot of the pain that people suffer from fibromyalgia and arthritis, get rid of the caffeine. Here is just the latest study from Duke University from Dr. James Lane. Caffeine contributes to the development of diabetes. That's right. The study suggests that caffeine disrupts glucose metabolism and can help in the development of type 2 diabetes, which, as we know, is a major epidemic in the United States. So this is just the latest evidence, and it also contradicts earlier studies suggesting that there was some protective effect. In adults with type 2 diabetes, studies have shown that the increase in blood glucose levels that occurs after they eat carbohydrates is exaggerated if they also have a caffeinated beverage, such as a cola or coffee. Now just think, how many Americans have diabetes? Diagnosed, about 25 million. Undiagnosed, probably 50 million. How many worldwide? Over 220 million, minimally. And how many have caffeine with a meal or after a meal? Most people. Most people have coffee after a meal. So my suggestion is give up the coffee completely. Give up the soft drinks. This was published in the Journal of Caffeine Research, the International Multidisciplinary Journal of Caffeine Science. For those women who thought they shouldn't be exercising because they believed it wouldn't benefit them, just the opposite is true. City University of Medicine and Biosciences in Kansas found that exercise benefits pregnant women. This is a study showing that while pregnant, if you exercise, that this would make enormous difference in helping the heart of your child after birth. And when it was reported a couple years back on this program that exercising strengthened a fetus's heart control, many women who were pregnant began to take advice and start jogging, power walking. And some signed up for prenatal yoga classes. Others found different ways to do low-impact aerobic activities in their daily lives. So this is a major finding. So if you are pregnant or know someone who is, and you want that developing fetus to have healthier heart during and after pregnancy, then get them to exercise. This was published in Experimental Biology. Now, I'm a believer that many of the things that harm us we can't see. They are invisible. What happens then when we can't see a pollution like radiation? We can't feel it. It can't be tasted. Well, it's like a lot of things. Can you actually see lead? Do you taste lead? Do you feel lead? The answer is no. This is the latest research from the University of California. Researchers say pollution is harming our brains. This was done in that showed that those individuals listening on our sister station, KPFK in Los Angeles, where I've been broadcasting 6 hours a week for 26 years now, I've said this many times, you really have to pay attention to the air. Here's the latest. New research suggests that pollution in Southern California is harming brains. We already knew that it could harm the lungs, but University of Southern California suggests that residents are even worse off than what they thought, especially because that traffic polluted highways. Quote, it's not like what you see in smog in the days when you don't get to see the mountains. This is according to the researcher. These are very small particulate matter. You cannot see them with the naked eye. And yet, air samples taken on the highways, and then the same amount of that air pollution exposed to rats over a 10-week period, for over 150 hours, showed that the rats developed brain damage, keeping neurons from developing, which could eventually lead to memory loss and even developmental disorders in children. So please understand, you're living out there, you're living in a very toxic environment. Get yourself a little ionizer to wear around your neck, that's good, and get a good quality home air filter for your office or home. And one other thing, for those of you who have asked so many times, you're allergic to gluten, to wheat, can you have wheatgrass? Yes, you can. In fact, wheatgrass is very good. Why? Because gluten develops in the wheat seed and germ. It does not develop in the grass. So all the grasses are great for you. And so if you want a bread, have a sprouted bread. If you have a sprouted bread, like Ezekiel bread or a seam bread, it doesn't have the gluten. Now, also a good nutrient is quinoa, Q-U-I-N-O-A. It's a grain-like seed. It's gluten-free. It's very high in protein, along with millet, corn. Very good for you. And something I would recommend that you have on a regular basis. So those are some things that we need to do. I believe we need to be eating more wheat-free, dairy-free diets. And one final thing here. As you know, if you've been listening, I've done a 4-hour in-depth original investigative reporting series on our deadly nuclear legacy in the United States. I produced the award-winning film Fatal Fallout 7 years ago, showing that we have no safe nuclear reactors, that we're exposed to nuclear emissions on a daily basis. Every nuclear facility in the United States puts out small amounts, and then more frequently puts out little larger amounts than when we are told. We're told not to worry. Even in Japan, we're told not to worry. Who are these people telling us not to worry? What is their background? What is their affiliation with the nuclear industry, the think groups, the front organizations? Here is the latest. Virtually all the numbers that you're getting on the media about radioactivity coming out of the Japanese plant is based upon iodine-131. Now, granted, iodine-131 only lasts about 8 days to 16 days. But you're not told about cesium-137, which has a half-life of 30 years, a full life of 60 years. So when they say, don't worry, well, don't worry about which one, because it's going into the water. And when it goes into the water, it'll be there 60 years from now. And that means that the water moves. Isn't it amazing how they'll say, don't worry, don't eat the fish immediately in the vicinity? You mean fish have a boundary? They stop currents, water currents stop at a certain boundary because a new law of physics says you can't? It's no different than a 10-mile safety zone around any nuclear facility. Why 10 miles? You mean the air is going to stop, the wind's going to stop? Well, let me explain it. We're approximately 36 miles from Indian Point. Right now, Indian Point nuclear facility above New York City is considered the most dangerous in the United States if there's a nuclear accident because it's on a fault line. If the wind is blowing at 15 miles an hour, a normal occurrence, 20 million Americans would be exposed to serious contamination of that ionizing radiation within 2 hours. before the governor could notice and get notification to you, before the president would notify, and exactly where are they going to take 20 million people? You can't. There's no evacuation plan. So they artificially and politically decided, let's make a ring around the factory of 10 miles, and that's because it had low population within 10 miles. Oh, by the way, I've just finished a major map. The highest incidence of breast cancer and childhood leukemia in the United States in our history is within 30 miles of every one of the 104 active nuclear facilities. And those are not my figures. Those are actual government statistics. It's just that you haven't been told about it. Because what would happen if people started to say, you mean I'm more at risk of breast cancer, my child of leukemia, if I live within 30 miles? Yes. So they're not telling the truth. So the cesium 137, they're not telling you that. They're also, the FDA said, oh, we're going to inspect all food imported from Japan. First, it's a physical impossibility. They can't inspect more than 1% of any food coming to the United States. So just understand you're not getting the full truth. I'm Gary Knoll. My guest is in studio. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists. Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world. Unlike 9 out of 10 people, your mind is irrepressible, and this threatens authority. And it wants them eliminated. So your whole life you've been told your strengths or weaknesses. Now I'm telling you otherwise. Your impulsivity is a gift. Impulses are your key to the miraculous. Your distractibility is an artifact of your inspired creativity. Your mood swings reflect the natural pulse of life. They give you unstoppable energy when you're high, deep soulful insight when you're low. Diagnosed with a disorder, that's society's latest way to deny its own illness by pointing the finger at you. Your addictive personality is just a symptom of your vast, underused capacity for heroic creative expression and spiritual connection. Your utter lack of repression, your wide-eyed idealism, your unmitigated open mind. Didn't anyone ever tell you? These are the traits shared by the greatest pioneers and visionaries, innovators, revolutionaries, procrastinators, and drama queens, activists on the social scene, space cadets, and mavericks, philosophers, and derelicts, business suits, flying fighter jets, football stars, and sex addicts, celebrities with ADD, alcoholics who seek novelty, first responders, prophets and saints, mystics, and JJJs. We are the same, you know, cause we're all affected by the way.
I'd like to welcome all of you to our program. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting live from our New York City studio. Joining me in studio now is Jesse Ventura. Many of you are familiar with Jesse's work. He's one of our most insightful social voices in the progressive community. He was a Navy SEAL during the latter phase of the Vietnam War, followed by a career in professional wrestling, and then on to politics, beginning as a mayor with the Brooklyn Park City in Minnesota, and later becoming elected governor of the state on the Independent Reform Party ticket from 1998 to 2002. And he is a positive voice for those who believe that we are a nation that do not pay attention to those who have a motive to in any way manipulate or use the political system or the media to their betterment and our detriment. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks, Gary. Great to be here.
He also has a book called 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to Read. We've gone through all of the points that we're going to discuss on today's show, and I can tell the audience that no matter how controversial or extreme the issues may seem, every single thing is documented and is accurate. That said, I want to begin with something that concerns many of us. I don't believe we have a democracy that is functioning. I believe that we have a lottery that is booming. Whoever pays the most buys the office. And right now, the Democrats are aligning themselves with Obama in a positive way, they think, to say that they're going to get over $1 billion just for one election, just for one office. And I'm thinking, who's going to give the billion except for those who can afford to? And what are they going to get in return? And why don't we have that discussion? Why is it that you can only run for an office if you can afford to pay for it?
Well, I guess I'm the odd man. I'm the weird one then, because I'll back up a little, Gary. When I was growing up, my father, who had only an eighth grade education, worked for the Minneapolis Street Department, was a World War II veteran, as was my mother. Not many people can say they have a mom and dad who both fought in World War II. He told me one time when I was a teenager, he said, "All politicians are a bunch of crooks." And I said to my dad, "Well, come on, Dad, you can't make a blanket statement like that. They can't all be." And he said, "Yes, they are. You know why?" And I said, "Why?" And in his simple way, he said, "Because they pay $1 million for a job that only pays $100,000, which none of us in the private sector would ever do that. You're not going to pay more money than what you're going to earn doing the job." Well, I'm fortunate that if my father were alive today, he could look at his son and say his son is not a crook, because when I ran for governor of Minnesota, I only raised $300,000 to do it. The media doesn't write about my election because I don't think they want the public to truly know what transpired in Minnesota in 1998, how remarkable it truly was, not just because it was me, but the entire process that we defeated. And I think that year, of course, the spending is now much more now. But that year, I think the Democrats and Republicans combined spent $12 million and lost to me. And I only spent $300,000 in getting back to my father. Well, I made $120,000 a year as governor. So if you multiply it out, I made $480,000 and I only raised and spent $300,000. So I bet you that I'm the only politician, if you want to call me that, in the last, I don't know, century, who actually made more money doing the job than he spent getting it.
When you look at people that have particular political agendas, and until recently almost all of it hidden, standing out on one side would be the Koch brothers.
Sure.
Very, very powerful, very wealthy, which is their right to be powerful and wealthy. I don't challenge that.
Mm-hmm.
What I challenge is how much control they have over the political discourse through their front organizations, operations, some very consumer and nice sounding, but the real hand that they have played behind the scenes now becoming more obvious. For example, they're in complete denial of global warming. They're in denial of the impact of environmental degradation. You don't have to go to global warming. You can look at our ozone layer. We have the science. You look at the pollution in our rivers, our streams, running a pipeline from Canada with tar coal, which is a tar oil, which is a terribly polluting, the most pollution of sensitive of all oils, clear down to the Texas. And yet the media doesn't look at the consequences of these political actions on the industries and then on the environment and then on human health. No one's connecting the dots. Why?
I'm not sure. You know, I maybe, I don't know if I can answer that, but I sure know that, you know, a lot of it's happening out there, why it's not being connected. Well, our media has fallen down. If you go back to our forefathers when they created the country, the media was supposed to be the fourth branch of government. And what their job was to watchdog the other three. We're not getting that anymore. We're getting the dumbing down. I mean, look at what the lead story is every night lately, Charlie Sheen. Now, Mr. Mm-hmm. Sheen has problems. We all know that. But that they're personal problems. They have nothing to do with the public discord or anything like that. And then go back a year and a half ago, I'll never forget it, when for literally 30 to 45 days, the lead story on every news station was the death of Anna Nicole Smith. You remember that?
Yes.
I mean, they even sent mobile units down to where she died at the hotel and went live. And I just saw the other day she was in the headlines again. Some judge made a ruling that I guess one of her boyfriend or a husband would get her house or something and could now challenge to get this big money that she as a gold digger had found and marrying the old guy or whatever it was. And I'm thinking, what's wrong with us? Why do we accept this from our media? Have we really turned into such a country that it's all glamour and flash today? And you know what the downfall of it all was, Gary?
What?
The show 60 Minutes. Now, 60 Minutes was a great show, but yes. Here's why I say it was the downfall. Up until that time, the media used to write off the news as a loss. They felt, okay, it's our job to go through the informing the public. We won't make money on this. We'll make it up in our entertainment department. So we'll take a loss on the news. Then all of a sudden came the show 60 Minutes. It shot into the top 10. And with the, as I call them, the bean counters, all of a sudden the light went off. Whoa, you mean we can make money with the news? And at that point, the news became entertainment. And then, of course, when it becomes entertainment, it then becomes they're not interested in reporting the news. They're now into creating it. And that's extremely dangerous when your media starts creating the news rather than simply reporting it.
I think sometimes 60 Minutes can do some pretty good pieces.
Oh, they do.
But I don't see them asking the hard questions. Let me give you an example.
Okay.
Just last Sunday, they had a segment on there that was showing all the people whose homes were foreclosed and that the banks had been engaged in the illegal activity, falsifying notary reports. So they were filling in. They had teenagers writing in a person's name thousands and thousands and thousands of times a day per teenager. They were paid $10 an hour in order to get the people out of their homes so they'd no longer have any legal impediment. But it was all illegal. So when the person was asking, from 60 Minutes, brought this to everyone's attention, okay, now we know the problem. It's there. Okay, no one's denying this. But then the solution was, okay, let's have those banks put a little bit of money aside to compensate these people to get them out of their house. So in other words, you're losing your house. And the bank that got the bailout, the TARP bailout and all these other, quantitative easing, they've got billions, right, at zero interest. They gave you a double-click mortgage. You bought your mortgage on adjustable at 4%, then 2 years later went to 6, now it's at 8, and you're late, it's 12. So they're making 1,200% profit, 1,200%. Are they told by the government to lower the cost of the mortgage to the market value of the house? No. Are they told, give this person a chance, just cause, charge them no interest, just give them a principal that they can afford like a rent? No. Instead, we're told now, based upon the 60 Minutes, let the banks give each of these people a couple $1,000 and the people go away. Well, who's going to give them that money? Well, I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen. They'll decide in Congress, we've got a great solution for all you homeowners who are losing your house and want to fight it. Don't fight it. Get a few $1,000 from the banks, but the banks are going to go right over the Federal Reserve window and say, we need a couple billion dollars to pay for this. We, the taxpayer, end up giving to the Federal Reserve and the Treasury, the banks the money for zero interest to throw someone out and pay them off in the process. But will those banks be held accountable? Will they go to jail? Will any banker go to jail? No, because there's too many people. You couldn't have enough jail cells in the world to fit all the corrupt bankers and people and mortgage brokers. And when I saw this, I'm saying, why isn't this man taking his research further and challenging the Federal Reserve, challenging the corruption, if one of these people that owned a home stole a loaf of bread, they'd be arrested, handcuffed, and sent into court. If a banker falsifies bank loans, which is a felony, why do they get a pass?
Exactly.
Your thoughts.
And what are they doing now? Now you've got all the state governments out there in major deficit because of what these bankers did. None of them are going to jail. And what are they doing? They're blaming the unions. Yeah. See that? The unions are getting the blame. Oh, they want a dollar more an hour. Oh, they want a little bit of more health benefits, whatever it might be. So it's the classic bait and switch. Gary, if I could, in my book, Document 31, is climate change as a threat to national security? This is our own military who acknowledges that climate change is real, and they put out a paper that we print in our book explaining all the studies they did. And it's clear in their study that our military is taking climate change serious, but yet many of our elected officials and all the rest are not.
They
so here's our own government military who did a major study on climate change, and we print the documents in my book, 63 documents the government doesn't want you to read.
I'm a big believer that we should have transparency, and WikiLeaks forced that transparency. And I believe that WikiLeaks has provided a world a great service, and one of the leaks was Hillary Clinton's call to American diplomats to spy on foreign ambassadors and leaders serving in the UN. And I'm not a huge fan of the UN, since it's dysfunctional in many ways. Nevertheless, it is intended to be a global body that reinforces goodwill between nations. And this demand is in complete violation of the basic ethics and morals of goodwill. And then we wonder why other nations have so much angst against us. What have you found to be the ulterior motive behind the State Department's efforts to spy on and gather personal information, credit card numbers, on foreign diplomats? What has your research
shown? Well, it's even worse than that. They're doing it on us. They're doing it on us, not just foreigners. They're doing it back against us. And what's appalling about it, whose money are they using to spy on us with? Ours.
Yeah.
They're taking our money and using it to spy on us as citizens here, even beyond the foreign countries. It's going on domestically, which is even more appalling. Getting to WikiLeaks, they're heroes in my book. Because did you know that last year our country declared 16 million documents top secret? We can't see six, and that must be just about every document they do. We're not allowed to see. And Gary, I feel I have every right to see them. Now, sure, I understand, I'm a former Navy SEAL, that there are secretive things that have to be done. But when it's over, it should be allowed to come to the surface within a short length of time of what we were doing. And when it gets to where 16 million documents we can't see, and this is under Barack Obama. And so it's showing me clearly that it doesn't matter if you elect a Democrat or Republican.
It's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant because they're both bought off. The only way that I see that we can take our country back without a violent revolution is for people out there, and I refer to them greatly as the lemmings, who, you know, march off the cliff and don't look left or right, simply stop voting for Democrats and Republicans. It's that simple. The answer's as clear as the nose on your face, but apparently, as the cliche says, we can't see the tree or the forest for the trees.
You have a lot of expose material in your book, and it was fun because when I was looking at your references and going back and independently checking it, I did the first major study in October 1989 in a feature magazine nationwide showing how the American military, the Pentagon in particular, did over 1,900 separate tests on human beings without their knowledge or permission on radiation alone. I'm not talking about the other tests they did.
Yeah.
Just radiation. For example, feeding children in the hospitals radiation on their toes to see how long it would take and to what degree their kidneys would be damaged. I thought that when that came out, there'd be some demand for all these secrets of experiments on American citizens, the vaults to be opened, nothing happened.
Yeah.
I then got the original documents under Freedom of Information to show that the Gulf of Tonkin, the real reason we got into Vietnam, was all a lie.
Yeah.
It was no more honest than George Bush's weapons of mass destruction. Well, there's two major wars, Vietnam and Iraq, both based upon lies. At what point do you believe that exposing the truth will either be met with some openness or you'll be painted as a conspiratorialist marginalized by the media and by people who would otherwise take you seriously because the media isn't doing their homework.
Well, I'm sure that there are people out there right now and the media is marginalizing me already because I happen to question all these things. And, you know, I'll give you an example. And when you talk about the Gulf of Tonkin incident and that you and the war, the deception that went into the war of Iraq, I will take it a step farther and talk about the event that you're not allowed to talk about, which I do, that you're not allowed to question, which I do. And that, of course, is what's near and dear to most people here in Manhattan, and that is the 9/11 attack. We print in this book the documentation we devote to. It's the book's divided into five parts, and the part four is all on 9/11. And some of the documents we discovered was document 46, which was the Pentagon's stand-down order on 9/11. I always questioned, as a former military person, where were our jets? Where was our air defense system that day that these supposed hijackers could hijack four airlines and yet not any jets were put up airborne? Well, there was a stand-down order. Always when you want to look for the government's involvement in shady dealings, if you want to call it that, always look for the violation of standard operating procedures. When those get violated, that's your first sign that something's not kosher here. And, of course, June 1st of 2001, and this was a document the 9/11 Commission was never shown, 2001 of June 11th, or June, I should say June of 2001, the standard operating procedures were changed. It used to be left to base commanders that if the FAA had a problem in the sky, they would call the nearest base commander of, you know, air defense, and the commander could make the call to scramble the jets. Well, that was changed, and so when it got to 9/11, no jets could be scrambled unless the approval of the Department of Defense, the DOD. And if you'll recall that day, they couldn't find Rumsfeld for nearly 2 hours. Well, that would be the stand down. They had no permission to go up, and all it required was Donald Rumsfeld not answering the phone. And that's why there were no jets up there to intercept these supposed planes. Then you go to document 47, which is the government NIST, who investigated and did the scientific investigation of what happened at 9/11. In their own documents, it states that Building 7, this third building that went down at 5:20 in the evening and was never struck by a plane, it went into, quote, free fall. They admitted in the documents. Now, I was a member of Underwater Demolition Team 12 for 3 years and SEAL Team 1. I was attached to them for two. Having known and being trained by the best demolition men we have in the world, nothing can go into free fall without all resistance being removed. That goes against Newton's law of gravity, which is physics. You can't argue that. So if the building went into free fall, which you can time it, because you can only fall so fast, and it was falling that fast, like when I used to jump out of airplanes and free fall, that's how fast the building was going down, because there was no resistance, and it's admitted in these documents. So the building had to be demoed. Because the only way it goes at free fall is to eliminate all resistance. So there you have the proof right there that counteracts all the stories we were told about 9/11.
My concern about 9/11 is I have done three separate in-depth investigative reporting broadcast specials on it. I have not yet, and do not feel I can with accuracy, accuse anyone of anything except the official report being completely riddled with inaccuracies. So I have to maintain my full objectivity. I can say that the report that the American public was given was not accurate, and I can support that with good science. And as a scientist, I have to always weigh that. So what I don't know, I'm not going to speculate, but I do believe that it's time the American public demanded a truly independent group of scientists, forensic experts, physicists, engineers, who have no connection to any political wonks and no special interest groups, and come in to do that together. There have been independent groups of architects and engineers. I've seen the reports. But that doesn't hold the same weight in a court of law under oath and subpoena power to present all the documents. These are opinions based upon, without the opportunity in an open forum to be challenged. So I believe that at the very least we should be concerned that this is just like the Martin Luther King assassination, the JFK assassination, RFK assassination, all of which I've done specials on, 63 special programs on JFK assassination alone, that we have not been given the truth, the full truth. And now when I look at how we've been lied to time and again, when I asked the Defense Department, did you do any human experiments? No. Well, they lied. They did.
Sure.
You know, so I believe that what should be happening is you continue to put pressure, keep the word out there. Well, and you'll have a lot of people, especially on the left, that the moment you say there could be a conspiracy, they say that's all nonsense. Then I ask them, would you believe that we should have habeas corpus? Do you believe that you should be able to make a phone call, a text message, an email without someone who you will not know interceding and reading and listening to your information to see if at any time they will see that anything may be put into a central file because they now consider you a suspect? And they'll say, well, no, I don't want someone reading my stuff. Well, they did it, you know, and they got away with it. And it was against the law until they changed the law, and Obama signed that law. I don't believe that we should be putting people, if you've got a problem against a prisoner, bring your evidence in a court of law.
Yes.
And let the evidence and the best evidence you bring, and we don't do that. So I have to ask these people, then, what is the advantage of having any law if you're not willing to obey it? And what happens if you are now the victim of not having that law?
Yeah, well, like the current one that has me so angry is President Obama and Holder, Attorney General, have decided that the trial of these alleged 9/11 conspirators down at Gitmo will be held by a military tribunal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that tells me right away we're not going to see one shred of evidence. They're going to declare them guilty to us, and they're going to put them to death, and then they're going to turn to people like me that question 9/11 and say, well, we proved right there. These were the guilty parties, and we put them to death. First of all, the Constitution, I was on with Judge Napolitano yesterday, and he's a judge, so I take his word for it as being, because I like him. He's one of the people that will stand. He said that the Constitution says the trials have to take place either in New York, Pennsylvania, or Virginia, because that's where all the murders took place that day. And also, I looked at it and thought, well, wait a minute. These guys they're holding right now are not part of a military. They don't belong to a country's military. Why would they fall under a military tribunal? It would be the equivalent, hypothetically, of arresting, say, five Hell's Angels on charges. Well, they deserve their day in court. They are innocent till proven guilty in our legal system as defined by our Constitution. Instead, you wouldn't try them under a military tribunal. And the other thing is, there are far different rules to a military tribunal than what there is to an open court of law. And I want to hear the evidence. Debunk me. Make me stop questioning. Let me hear the evidence the United States has so that I can believe what they told me, allegedly.
Do you realize how this can be used in the political campaign by Obama saying to the right and the middle and the Blue Dog Democrats and the Clinton Democrats that look what I did for you on this issue?
Yeah.
I was appalled by this. I believe that if you've got your evidence, bring it based upon our constitutional guarantees of a fair and quick trial. And if you don't have the evidence, then why are you holding someone without bail and without opportunity to present? I just think it's wrong.
Let me throw this in. What about this poor Bradley Manning, the alleged private in the military?
He's stripping him naked. What is the purpose of that?
That revealed the documents. He currently is being held in Quantico in solitary confinement. And let's remember something. We no longer have the high ground anymore. We are a country who tortures.
Yes.
So who's to say young Mr. Manning isn't being tortured right now as we speak? And let me add this. I know what waterboarding is because I've had it done to me. I've been waterboarded, and I will tell you it is torture. There is no way around it.
What do you think of this, Jesse? Do you think at any point in the last 30 years that we've been supporting the 22 separate Arab League nations, 18 of which are despotic and or run by royal families, the rest are supposedly democratically elected, but they're not, that we have been, in many of those, outsourcing prisoners? We've been rendering them to other countries where they then torture them, imprison them. Many have died. And we do a lot of business militarily with those people. They're big fat cats. They give us oil, and they give us oil money and buy our weapons. We're not building new farms. We're not building schools. We're not building better homes. We're not giving reforestation. We're not putting in new irrigation systems to help the people.
We're not looking for alternative energy.
No, all we're doing is supporting these despotic people. And now suddenly we take an attitude, oh, we're for democracy. And I have to ask, well, why weren't you for it before Tunisian, the man put himself on fire? Why is it you only do anything after you've been forced to? Your thoughts on our position in the Middle East from your perspective?
Well, first of all, we only get involved if there's something that the multinational corporations can profit from. Then we'll get involved. Look at Rwanda. There was nothing, no money to be made there. So we show those documents in this book, too, how we systematically ignored Rwanda while the genocide of nearly a million people took place that was horrible. I read a book on it this winter when I was living in my home in Mexico, because I do a lot of reading down there rather than watching television or that thing. And I read the story from the NATO commander. He was a colonel of the Canadian military. And he said that with a mere 20,000 troops, he could have stopped all of it. None of it would have happened in Rwanda, but he didn't have the manpower. They had to protect themselves from dying. They couldn't go out and stop this stuff because they had nobody there. We did nothing. Yet, you notice Libya, a lot of oil there. Iraq,
in
a lot
Eastern
of oil
Libya.
There.
Eastern Libya, that's where the rebels are being supported.
And then let me state this about Afghanistan. Way back in the 80s, it puzzled me. Why would the Soviets invade Afghanistan? Who'd ever even heard of the place? I barely even knew. That was probably the first time in my life I even knew it existed. And then it came clear to me about 6 months ago. There was a story in the paper how they allegedly just discovered, I guess some Marine was on patrol and tripped over it, and whoa, what do we got here? Vast mineral wealth. To the tune of lithium, they're claiming there's a vein of lithium there worth could be $1 trillion. And what is lithium used for, Gary? Every cell phone, every computer, and soon to be electric cars. It's a required element to batteries.
Jesse, I'm going to go back to something you just said. By the way, if you've just joined us, I'm Gary Nall. We are video streaming. You can watch today's show from going to progressiveradionetwork.com or GaryNall.com. Jesse Ventura is in studio. He's on a tour with his book, 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to Read. I'm doing a documentary on Rwanda. There have been some really outstanding feature films and documentaries, but one that has never been done is this. And normally I don't talk about a documentary I'm doing it, but I will. No one has ever asked basic questions. Where did the shipment of the machetes come from that were used in the slaughter, which was the primary weapon of destruction?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And who exactly gave the stand-down order to the NATO commander in three specific instances? One, he had discovered from an informer the actual building that was holding the weapons before the genocide got into full-blown. And he let the UN know that he was going to go in there and confiscate them. He was told not to.
Yeah.
Then the Belgium soldiers had been, 10 of them, taken prisoner. He had a way of going in and rescuing the 10 Belgian prisoners. He was told not to. But he said, if these Belgians are harmed, they were all shot and killed.
Yeah, they were all killed.
They will leave the country. If they leave the country, Italy's going to leave the country. There's not going to be anyone here to protect the citizens. Knowing that, there was a stand-down order. Then one of those horrendous acts imaginable. Over 2,200, mainly Tutsis, were in a Catholic church.
Oh, yeah, I read about
And there were there the Belgians were protecting them. But right outside there, knowing the Belgians were leaving, were several thousand Hutu, and they were all day long smacking their machetes against their legs and yelling what they were going to do. The commander wanted to immediately go in there and protect and get rid of the harm that could come, intervene. He was told to stand down, and his soldiers had to watch as 2,200 plus men, women, and children were slaughtered to death over several hours. Only, I think only two survived because they were thought to be dead and they weren't. And then finally, they were in such contempt any sense of civility that the Hutu, who were directing the genocide, brought women into a circle of men in front of the UN headquarter building where this commander was, and then they were told not to shoot, not to intervene, and all day long they kept whacking the women. But they didn't whack the women to kill them with one blow. All day long they would hit the women on the arms, on the back, cut them until finally they were all dead. And it took all day to kill all these women. They kept bringing more women in and more women in. And this is what this man had to contend with. All the while, Bill Clinton was giving the stand-down orders with Hillary Clinton and to Madeleine Albright, who was giving it to the UN. That story has never been told. And I believe that the day should come when Hillary and Bill Clinton should be held accountable under oath to tell the truth, because the documents and witnesses exist to show the complicity. So when I hear someone say, oh, we don't want another Rwanda, and I'm asking, do you really know what you're talking about? Do you have any knowledge, Obama, about what actually happened, the truth? The media has never touched this story and won't.
Right.
Not 60 Minutes, not Dateline. Go back and see what role the French played in the genocide in Rwanda. Their hands are bloody. Look at the British. Their hands are bloody. So when the real story of what happened behind the scenes and at the UN has occurred, then the former director of the UN will be shamed as he should be. Your thoughts?
Well, I can't add anything to that. I read all that in the colonel's book that I read, the Canadian Colonel. I read it this winter, and it was a disturbing, disturbing book to read. But let me add another one to that that kind of ties in. But have you read Kill Bin Laden?
No.
By Colonel Dalton Fury?
No.
Oh, he was the elite Delta Force commander at Tora Bora when they had Bin Laden supposedly pinned down. Well, they did have him pinned down. They knew that the only way out was through this mountain pass into Pakistan. So he wanted to put the Delta Force right on the other side of the mountain so that when Bin Laden went for his escape through the mountain, he'd walk right into an ambush, right?
Yeah.
In his book, he tells how he went right into the Oval Office. They laid out the plan, and Bush and Cheney would not let them do it.
Why?
He doesn't know. Why did they leave an escape route? And that's where Bin Laden escaped, supposedly at Tora Bora. So clearly they didn't want him caught, because they left him a route to leave. And I was stunned when I read this in the guy's book. It's called Kill Bin Laden by Colonel Dalton Fury. It's out there, and I urge everyone
to pick it up and read. Has anybody ever, any news people ever ask?
No.
Cheney or Bush?
No,
why?
Of course not. And then get this. Recall when Bush, he always would say, well, no, I leave everything in the field up to my generals. It's their call. Now, here you've got an elite Delta Force commander, which as a Navy SEAL, I have great respect for the Delta Force. An elite Delta Force commander making an in-the-field call of what to do. And he's being overrun by a guy who couldn't make it to National Guard meetings, and by a guy who had five deferments from the Vietnam War. So these two bozos, as I call them, who know nothing about what's going on, made the call at Tora Bora, which allowed Osama bin Laden to escape. Clearly they did not want him caught. Why else would they do that?
Don't know, but it's worth talking to him. Two more issues I'd like for you to address, please.
Sure.
Nuclear power. All right?
Well,
you're particular and specific to nuclear plants, and I believe one was illegally storing spent fuel waste, and which was, of course, is the main source of radioactive contamination in the Japanese plant right now. Tell us your experience.
Well, first of all, let me back up. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I remember way back in the 70s when I got out of the service, I found a T-shirt in Rolling Stone magazine, and I bought it and used to wear it. And it showed two nuclear power plants, and the caption underneath said, "From the people who brought you Vietnam."
Yeah, well, that should have said something.
And again, nuclear power in itself may be good, but not until we figure out what to do with the radiation and the waste. You can't just sit and blindly go nuke everyone. Oh, more nuclear power, more nuclear power. We don't know what to do with this stuff. And it's going to come back on us until we know what to do. And it's awfully stupid not to figure out if what you're going to do with stuff like this, because the waste happens. It's real. How do you store it? Where do they put it? Now they want to put it out in those mountain ranges way out there in Nevada or wherever
it is. Bad idea. That's right on a major fault. No, I'm going to invite Danny Schechter, who comes on right after us.
Okay.
Come in. You know Danny Schechter?
I don't know if I do.
He's a multi-Emmy award-winning reporter, used to be with 2020.
Okay.
And done a lot of good documentaries.
Okay.
For the People documentaries. Hi, Danny. Nice to see you, Danny.
I don't know if there's a chair. Can I get one?
Yeah, you can come right over here. And tell us about the TSA scanning, since they told us there was no harm, no negativity would occur by being scanned, and I'm saying not true.
Well, first of all, if you didn't read, I was living in Mexico and had been down there for over a month, so that debunked all the talking heads on TV that said I did it for a publicity stunt. Well, if I was going after a publicity stunt, wouldn't I sit right in a TV studio when I do something so I could get publicity? Instead, I'm down in Mexico, an hour from pavement, an hour from electricity where I live, and I didn't even learn that there was and I have to confess to this, I never learned about the earthquake in Japan until 5 days after it happened, and I didn't learn about our war in Libya until 5 days after it happened. And So I when I live down there, I live off the grid and all that stuff. And now, I've been doing so many interviews, I'm getting one of them brain fades.
TSA.
Well,
your concerns about the scanning
equipment. I have now, if you didn't see January 28th, I sued. I brought a federal lawsuit, Governor Jesse Ventura, against Homeland Security and the TSA. And here's why. I have metal in my body. So it matters not. I can go through that thing naked. It is going to go off, and it does go off. So now I'm subjected personally to either going in what I call the microwave or being groped, sexually assaulted. Those are my two choices, because I refused the microwave when they did this enhanced stuff they're doing now. It used to be when I'd set it off, they just wand you, which was kind of embarrassing in a public place when you're a former governor, but I put up with it. But when they shifted to this now enhanced, you know, groping and the microwave, I passed through the last time, which was last fall, and it went off, and they said, "Here, you can go right in here." And I said, no, I will take the hand thing. You should see me have to. "Hand search," the girl yells it out like I'm putting her out.
And they don't even, Governor, they don't even give you a happy ending, you know, on this grope, you know what I'm saying?
It's
not pleasurable. Yeah. It's completely punitive.
Well, let me finish. And so I started, you know, at that point I flew once and put up with this once. I went to my attorneys and I said, "I want to sue. I want to sue the government." So we brought the lawsuit. It's pending right now, and I'm suing under the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, which is reasonable search and seizure. I'm suing over the fact that I believe it is unreasonable to believe Jesse Ventura poses a threat. I'm a 6-year Navy honorably discharged veteran. I'm a mayor. I'm a former mayor, former governor. I've been flying for 30 years, and it's also arbitrary. The Speaker of the House is not subjected to going through this, and I'm challenging, saying, how is the Speaker any more patriotic than me? He didn't serve in the military. I did.
I wonder if the government shuts down, if the TSA is going to have to shut down too, or if they're going to be considered, special status, like members of Congress and congressional staffs apparently will not be laid off, even as other government workers will.
Yeah. What I find interesting, here's what I want. If there's going to be a government shutdown, here's something to put out. Well, while they're shut down, we should have our income tax suspended. Because if they're not working, why do we have to pay for work not being done? We should have a 2-week grace period in there. No one has to pay any federal income tax because the government is shut down.
That would be the logical thing to do. You know, Governor Danny Schechter here with you. I'm an admirer of yours.
Thank you.
A colleague of mine gave you a copy of my new film, Plunder, The Crime of Our Time, which is seeing the Wall Street crisis as a crime story, not as a business problem. And it seems like we need to shut them down. We need to shut Wall Street down if we can't prosecute the people responsible for this financial disaster. I mean, we know what happened now. We have a good idea of which CEOs and which banks profited from the misery of so many millions of Americans, foreclosures and the like. Talk about search and seizure. People are being thrown out of their home by banks that don't even own those homes. They're asserting ownership. They can't prove ownership. I mean, this is a disgrace to the human race, and it seems as if our government is silent on it.
Well, let's remember something.
Final thought.
Well, let's remember something. Our elected officials don't run our country. The Federal Reserve does. It's a simple thing. He who has the money has the power. And it's a small group of bankers that have all the money. So it isn't our president or our elected officials that run our country. It's the Federal Reserve. They're the very bankers that you want to go. Why, they're going to go after themselves? I don't think so.
No. And anyway. Jesse Ventura, thank you very much for coming in and being with us during this hour.
It was my pleasure. Keep up the great work. I say this to everyone that talks to me. Thank you for having me, because if not for you, our First Amendment rights wouldn't exist to talk to people like me, and it's courage on you to have people like me on.
Well, Pacifica is known for being the leader for probably the last 50 years in the radio in supporting freedom of speech on controversial issues with people that the mainstream media is just not willing to do their homework to see how they could do a good interview.
Let me give you one last little thing. The big guns at Fox, you know, they won't have me on. But Al Jazeera will. So I've been saying Al Jazeera's more fair and balanced than Fox.
And they are. And they are.
They are.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening and watching. We look forward to sharing more on our next program. For those of you who live in the New York area, or those of you who live anywhere listening right now, Sunday evening, 8 p.m. over the Internet, Progressive Radio Network. We look forward to having you there. Next up, right here, in the studio, Danny Schechter.
Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.